Here we go.
Now, this is 98FM's League of Ireland podcast with Jamie Moore and Darren Cleary.
After one of the worst weeks in the history of the League of Ireland, the focus is back on the pitch on 98FM's League of Ireland podcast this week, and we've got all the bases covered. It's all about the centre-backs this week. The game of the weekend is a Dublin derby at Dalymount Park on Friday, as the in-form Bohemians, with three wins and a draw in their last four matches, host a St. Pat's team who picked up their first win of the season against their other Dublin rivals Shamrock Rovers last weekend. Bo's tough tackling defender Dan O'Byrne and Saints super sub scoring hero Josh O'Hanlon. We'll look ahead to that game. Both scored cracking headers last weekend. Josh with his very first touch, in fact. Shamrock Rovers have lost four of their opening six league matches as they welcome Finn Harps to Talla Stadium this Friday in what looks like a must-win game even this early in the season. Dan Devine will tell us why they've started the season so poorly and why he's back in Ireland building his career with the Hoops. While our first division focus, will talk to yet another big centre-back, Shelburne's Derek Prendergast, who scored in their 4-1 win over Athlone last weekend. They face Wexford at Tolka Park this Friday, and Del Boy will tell us how they plan to make it 6 points from six and why Robbie Bailey has left the club, while our tweet of the week will discuss socks, fixing faulty nets, and Bray Wanderers' lovely tribute to the late great Ryan McBride.
The League of Ireland podcast on 98FM.
Darren Cleary, speaking of Del Boy, your favourite Only Fools and Horses moment, please, because Derek Prendergast is called Del Boy, or Del, to the lads, and I was watching Only Fools and Horses last night on an omnibus on UK Gold for hours. It's the best TV series in the history of TV, I think.
What's the episode where they go on holidays and Del goes out on the jet ski?
Yes, in America. Yeah. Miami Twice, it's called. They're trying to get a murder because he looks like a mafia boss.
Yes, they have no idea that Derek Trotter has no mafioso connections whatsoever.
That
would be my favourite one.
My favourite is Trigger Falling Through the Bar.
Trigger Falling Through the Bar is absolutely brilliant. Isn't Jason McAteer nicknamed Trigger because
yes.
he's
a bit silly?
Yeah.
Yes.
Not the
Did
brightest
you know
bulb in the bulb box.
That when that scene was originally written, Trigger wasn't in it. And what happened was that the writer, whose name is John Sullivan, who's in fact now dead, Trigger, whose real name I can't remember, who's now dead himself, but he was in another studio.
It's an awful cheery episode of the podcast.
He was in another studio recording another TV show and happened to finish early, and they just wrote him into the scene and he fell through the bar and hilarity ensued.
And now 27 years later, here we are on the League of Ireland podcast talking about it.
We are, only because Derek Prendergast, nickname is Del Boy. We'll speak to him on
he
our first
division. He got some great goals
against
Waterford, is that
he
a
did.
Couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, no, he's been flying. All the centre-backs score, and Dan O'Byrne score him, of course.
Yeah.
Dan Devine's been doing well for Shamrock Rovers, and we just spoke there about Derek Prendergast.
The League of Ireland podcast on 98FM.
But we are going to start this week's League of Ireland podcast by hearing from two of our League of Ireland heroes, ex-Dundalk players Andy Boyle and Daryl Horgan, about their Republic of Ireland senior debuts on Tuesday night in the 1-0 defeat to Iceland in a 3 international friendly at the Aviva Stadium. Both players coming on in the second half and impressing very much. They've both been speaking to 98FM's Stephen Doyle afterwards. Firstly, here's winger Daryl Horgan.
Oh, jeez, you know, chance to play for your country. It's unbelievable, obviously once in a lifetime opportunity to make your debut, and hopefully I can stay in the team and stay in the squad, and you know, hopefully we can qualify for Russia. If I can play any kind of part in that, it'd be special.
I don't know if you picked up on it watching from the sidelines, Daryl, but James McLean played that game like it was a World Cup qualifier. He was incredibly intense. Did you have an eye on him, kind of thinking I got to do something like that when I get out there?
Not overly, no. You know, just going to try to play my own game more so than anything else. There's no point worrying about anything else. James, there's things that I definitely can't do, you know, so I have to go out when I go, and I think there's an opportunity for myself, you know, to play for your country. Try not to mess it up too much, and I thought I'd done okay, but probably room for improvement, then hopefully the manager thinks I've done enough.
At what point before the game does he give you instruction? Did he say anything before you went on the pitch, or before the match, or during the week?
No, nothing. He never explicitly said, you know, you'll be playing. You know, he's never said. He said, be ready. And you know, he kind of gave an indication that I might get an opportunity, but until your number's up and you're running on, you don't take it for granted. You know, you try and make yourself ready and as ready as you possibly can, and that's what I've done.
So how do you know what to do then when you go out on the pitch?
suppose.
If you know what I mean. Do you get any instruction whatsoever?
Yeah. 19, 20 years now at this stage, you know, you'd have to have a general idea. No, he knows what he wants, and he tries to make clear to everyone, you know, what he wants from them. But you just have to go play your own game as well. You know, he's picked me because he likes the way I play, you know, and hopefully he thought I'd done enough today, and, you know, who knows. But we'll see how it goes in June, and look, I have a lot of football to play before then as well. You have to aim for that, you know, that has to be the plan. Like, you can't rest in your laurels and say I'm happy at any level. You know, that's, you know, the top players never do that. I'm obviously not one of the top players, but, you know, you have to strive to be as good as you possibly can be, and look, that's my aim. Obviously I want to play at the highest level I can, whatever that might be. I suppose we'll find out at the end of my career, but look, I'm enjoying it now, and I'm just going to keep working hard.
Yeah, well done to Daryl Horgan, chatting to 98FM's Stephen Doyle on our League of Ireland podcast this week. And Steve-O also caught up with another former Dundalk hero and another pressing star, Andy Boyle, about his Ireland debut too.
Yeah, it's nice, I suppose. At this moment in time, we probably come in a package. But yeah, like, I suppose the two of us doing well, I suppose, at club level, and obviously to get an international debut together on the same night is special.
And your club boss has been singing your praises over the last couple of weeks. What did Martin have to say to you before or after the debut?
To be honest, I haven't seen too much of the gaffer so far, so hopefully I've done enough tonight to plant a seed in his head. I know there's been a few injuries and stuff in the camp, but I suppose it's been good enough to select me in the past two camps, and I just want to say just keep doing well in training, and I've been given a chance to do well on the pitch.
Did any of the management team have words for you before you made the debut tonight?
Oh, I think it's as a professional footballer, you kind of have to be ready for these occasions, and I just train all week, paired right, and time we went on the pitch tonight, and I thought it was okay.
Did it feel any, even though it was just a friendly, did it feel any different to playing club football?
Not really, to be honest with you. It's just, I suppose, it's another bit of football, so you have to look at it, and as I said, I just really enjoyed it tonight. Not really, I suppose. I think that the past year has been a bit of a whirlwind in the sense of going on what we've done at club level with Dundalk, and then obviously the move to Preston, and tonight to cap it off your first international cap. It's been an amazing year, and I hope it's the first of many.
Yeah, well done to Daryl Horgan and Andy Boyle. Hopefully lots more appearances for the men in green for the former Dundalk and now Preston North End players. Now, we're going to start the action on this week's League of Ireland podcast in terms of our previews and look ahead to Bohemians against St Pat's. It's a 7:45 kickoff at Daly Mill Park this coming Friday evening, Darren. And we may be able to ditch the winter coat because it might actually be bright come kickoff time.
Who knows? There's a grand stretch in the evening. There we go. That's our first use of that term. Summer soccer is upon us. I can put the duvet jacket to bed for a while.
You can indeed. And Darren has been looking ahead to that big game at Daly Mill Park this Friday.
Yeah, Jamie, after a sluggish start to the season, all is rosy in the garden now at Bowes. They made it 3 wins in their last 4 with a 1-0 victory over Drogheda United last Saturday night. Joining us on the line now to reflect on that victory is the man who was instrumental in getting that victory, Dan O'Byrne. Welcome to the League of Ireland podcast. How are you?
How's things, Darren? You all right?
Yeah, not too bad. I'd say yourself, pretty happy. This would have been a very different interview a couple of weeks ago when you had that rough start to the season. Big loss against Derry. Things weren't looking too good, but you fairly lively turned it around.
Yeah, well, I thought the performance against Derry and Rovers weren't bad, considering the score lines, especially in the Derry game. I thought we played well that day. Just conceded silly goals.
1-1 in Galway, with Galway not the worst result in the world, then getting a winner on the road against Drogheda. Talk to us a bit about that last game. You got the goal yourself. What was it like?
It was great. Yeah, I felt it coming, to be honest. I was getting closer each game from the start of the season, and then during the week of training I got a few, and the lads were saying Dinny was out on Friday. They were all saying that I was going to score, so you feel it coming.
You felt it in your waters. Talk to us a bit about the goal, how it came, what it was like for those who didn't see the highlights.
I couldn't remember it properly until I looked back at it last night. I thought I went top corner.
It was more spectacular in your mind, was it?
Yeah, yeah.
It was a massive 3 points, though. And, I mean, to win like that ugly on the road, I mean, we saw it against Limerick, we saw it against Drogheda. How important is it in this league when you look at the whole makeup and the complexion of the fact three teams are going down to be able to grind out those victories? How important is that for you lads?
It's great, especially when you're going down to teams that know themselves that are going to be struggling towards the end of the season. Like, everybody's going to want 3 points, like, so they're fighting for their lives to not concede and try score goals. Like,
from a personal level, I mean, I know you've had an injury nightmare crisis. It was the knee for you. Watching on Seamus Coleman last Friday, done real damage to his leg. You know what that road is like. How does it feel to be back through it, having, you were nearly, 12, 18 months out of action with the knee?
Yeah. I done it twice, a bit longer than 2 years it was. But it's great now. I'm starting to feel the last 3 years of being... What I don't want to look back on, like, just look forward now. Them 3 years are slow and painful.
Did you have any doubts during them that you could get back to where you are now?
Yeah, well, I always thought, like, during the rehab, it's slow, like, especially. But after I done it the first time, the first ACL, I thought I felt good, and then I done it again, the meniscus, and I was like, it was looking dark, like, I was getting told that you struggled to play again, and it wasn't looking good for me. But now that this pre-season went well, I'm starting to feel good now again, back to where I was when I done my knee.
Yeah, get a decent pre-season under your belt. I mean, you've started to get a good run in the team as well, starting week in, week out, and then to come on the back of this little run, you know, 3 wins in 4, it's a really, really good time, I suppose, not just for you personally, but for the club. I mean, how does it feel to be back where some people doubted you'd get to again?
Ah, it's great, especially people writing us up at the start of the year, and it's great to be back where balls belong, especially. It's great for the fans as well, for sticking through.
It must have been really good to keep that belief. I mean, I know you mentioned against Rovers and against Derry, you didn't particularly play poorly, but still lost the games. I mean, keeping the faith must have been so important, especially going into that game against Bray, because, I mean, they had, up until that point, a really, really good start. You go 2-0 down, and, I mean, character is the word we mentioned, to go back and eke that game out 3-2. Is it too simple to say that was kind of the turning point in the last few weeks, was knowing that you could beat Bray in those circumstances?
Going into it, we were confident. To be honest, we were confident after the Derry game and the Rovers game. Like, we played well in both games, and we'd no luck. Me, myself and Dinny coming off, I thought it was even enough against Rovers at half time, going in the law, and myself and Dinny went off, and you did change the whole centre of the team. Like, and then going into Bray, we were confident again. But when then we went in at half time against Bray again, nil all, and the gaffer said about, same against Rovers, going in and all, and 10 minutes later, 2-0 down.
After you get Pats out of the way, Cabo in the League Cup, and then Sligo, you've got Cork, and then you've got Dundalk. Does it become very, very important to get something from the next two games, knowing that you've got two of the best teams in the country to follow that? I mean, is it a good or a bad time to play Pats, given the little bit of a bad run they were on before they met Rovers at the weekend?
It is, Nathan. They're top quality players there. It was bound to strike sometime. To get together, look, I think they'll kick on now, but it's a massive game for us, right? Each game, we take each game one by one.
What do you make of Pats? I mean, you mentioned there they do have top quality players. They haven't really gelled. They did beat a Rovers team with 10 men. Which Pats turns up, I suppose, is going to be the big question for you lads, because if they're the Pats that turned up the last day, they'll cause you problems. But if they're the Pats that haven't been particularly playing well, it might be a different story.
Exactly. It's a double derby. Anything can happen. Like, it's a massive game for both teams. We'd be more confident, I think, going into it after the last results and clean sheets we've had. And they're conceding goals.
The games last season against Pats, Dano, they were a bit weird because, I mean, you lost the one in Richmond Park pretty comfortably and then pretty spectacularly, then at home did pretty well. So how do you know what to expect from them? What are your memories of those matches?
I think that was the weirdest game I ever played in, that Pats game. We beat them 5-1, I think it was.
Yeah. On a bank holiday Sunday, wasn't it?
Holiday Monday. Yeah, it was a great sunny evening. Yeah. It was just goal after goal, and they had chances, and we just kept scoring. It was crazy. It wasn't like the Pats that you know of to concede that so many goals and outpass them and outplayed them.
What were your memories? Was it a weird game to play in when you're, I think you were like 4-0 up after half an hour?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I was looking at, I think I said to Derek Fender, I was like, what's going on here? I couldn't believe it. It's crazy.
I mean, obviously, you mightn't have that kind of start the next day, but Pats, as a side, from those games with them, I mean, they'll obviously have that in the back of their head as much as you'll have it in their back of the head. The Dublin Derby, does form, is it an old cliche to say form doesn't really come into it? I mean, these points are up for grabs. Form didn't come into it when you hammered Pats. It didn't come into it when they bet you 3-0. It tends to not have much of a bearing.
No, not at all. It's just whatever happens on Friday happens. who wants them all, really, to be honest. I don't think he'll come down to form or anything like that. She wants the 3 points more.
Getting Izzy Akinadi back is going to be crucial. Has he been back around the club? I know he had his operation recently.
Yeah, he's been back in the gym there now, each training session, but it's him, Owen Wirren, and Dinny now as well. Like, so three big players we're missing. I think it's gone against us a lot, but we've stuck on and dug it out the last few games. Hopefully we keep going and get the lads back.
Yeah, they're the kind of lads I don't think any team in the country could afford to have sitting on a bench.
Especially start of the year, like, you see the lads going so early, like, after having a good pre-season, and the boys do it a week before the start of the year. It's heartbreaking.
And, I mean, especially for Dinny's point of view, because he'd been in great form, scoring a couple of goals up until he picked up that knock.
Yeah, he's been flying, in fairness to him, and against his old club on Friday, he would have loved to play.
Yeah, particularly because it didn't go well.
Jerry had last
year.
Yeah,
not playing at all there, Pat.
Top lad, then.
Yeah,
but he has it in him. He's goals in him, and he's come back stronger, and he keeps scoring goals. He's not too far off as well. So.
Well, that's good to hear. I mean, you've got Pats, and then taking out the League Cup, because it's obviously a very, very important competition, but I know Keith has said himself, this year it's all about the league, it's all about trying to finish up as high as the table as possible and staying as far away from that relegation scrap as possible, because it's going to be absolutely brutal. Do you look at the Pats game and look at the Sligo game as well, particularly two of the poorest teams in the league so far, I mean, in terms of results, and think, look, there's a potential here to win both of these games, 6 points, and go on a pretty decent run?
Yeah, there is, big time. We'll just look at Pats now. We beat Pats, then we go on to Sligo and so on. We don't look at it like two or three games in a row. We just take it one by one. Hopefully you can get 3 points on Friday and then kick on to Sligo and get another three.
I know you said the confidence was always there, wasn't shaken by the losses to Derry and the losses to Rovers. I mean, is it now where it becomes easier to believe in the plans because they've actually started to work for you, having, you know, it didn't go your way, you had no luck in the first two games, and now you're on a pretty decent run with the exception of Galway? That's a pretty good return, eking out the games, keeping clean sheets as well must be pretty important too.
It's massive. I'd rather a clean sheet than a goal, to be honest. I don't score many goals, but I'd rather a clean sheet as a defender. Like, you can't beat them.
And in terms of the overall aims and ambitions, I know yourself, you're just, after your year, you're probably just enjoying every game you get to play. What do you want to do between now and, I suppose, the end of the season personally? What goals have you set for yourself? I mean, you've already got among the goals, so that's a nice start.
Just to keep playing, injury free, and keep going. I'm out of work now at the minute. The first time in nearly 6 years I've been out of work, and I'm really enjoying it, so I'm just concentrating the football.
Does it make football more enjoyable because you have that... Just that time to dedicate to it fully?
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't believe it. Like, since I finished that Christmas there, and it's just the amount of sleep you get, the time you get to eat, and you just prepare yourself for training properly, prepare yourself in games properly, and so much better mentally and physically.
Talk to me about the kind of mental change it makes, because I know it must be difficult when you're leaving the house very early in the morning, and then if you go straight from work to train, you're probably not getting back there until late at night.
I was actually working night shifts.
Oh, wow. So you're leaving at night and you're getting back early in the morning.
I was leaving train and going straight into work, and that was that.
That must be the killer. It sounds terrible.
Really bad. Yeah.
I'd say you don't miss that at all.
Oh, not at all. That's why I left it, to have a go at the football.
And in terms of the setup, I mean, Keith, what he's done with the resources has been pretty impressive. I mean, I know you are working off a part-time budget. From your point of view, does it seem like while you are part-time in name, it's not at all in nature?
No, Jesus, you're training 5 days a week or whatever it is, 4 days a week, and the lads are putting it in, and especially in pre-season, we're doing extra days and days in the gym, and it'll pay off at the end of the season.
Well, look, it's going pretty well for you this week. You've got back on track, so we wish you very, very well at the weekend. Dan O'Byrne, thanks so much for your thoughts.
Cheers, Darren. Thank you.
Yeah, that's Dan O'Byrne there, and one man who got a taste of the Dublin Derby for the first time is St. Pat's striker Josh O'Hanlon. He scored as the Saints recorded their first win of the season against Shamrock Rovers, and I'm delighted to say he joins me now on the line to preview their game against Bowes. Josh, welcome to the League of Ireland podcast.
How's it going? You all right?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
That must have been a nice way to come off a bench.
It was a good win, you know. It all happened so fast, and it was just one of those. It's all a bit surreal, to be honest. A moment of madness, really. You know, the gaffer just turned around to me and said, you know, now would be a good time to get your first goal. And luckily, I was in the right place at the right time and was able to get the winner, you know.
That's all he needed to say. I could be a manager if it's that easy.
Yeah.
Come on and get us a goal there. I'm sure you'll say you do them every week in training, but have you had a connection as good as that in the last while? I mean, underside of the crossbar, far corner, keeper no hope, it was just hit your head perfectly.
Yeah, no, it all ended up perfect in the end. Like, couldn't really explain it. I couldn't even remember, to be honest, when it happened. I was kind of, the first time I seen it back was actually last night, and like in training, the lads were kind of asking me, "Oh, did you know it was gonna like go in?" And I was just kind of saying, "Look, like, I can't even remember, to be honest." And as I said, last night was the first time I seen it back, and it was nice to see it back.
Yeah, it's such an important goal as well. I mean, when you talk about the feelings after matches, people are happy. I'd say a lot of the feeling around that Pat's dressing room was just sheer relief.
Yeah, definitely. I think, as I said in an interview the other night, it was, it is relief because we didn't really get off to the start we wanted in the season. And I think we knew as a group in the change room that we were well capable of doing good things this season, and I think it was just nobody could quite put their finger on what was going wrong, and we just weren't clicking maybe, and we just maybe needed that bit of luck. And as I said, luckily I was able to come up with that and get an important goal to kickstart the season for us.
Yeah, because that's exactly what we'll need. It'll need to be a kickstart for you guys, because there's no point now in not building on that, because once you actually get that first win, you hope that it's the start of something special, because there have been a couple of bad results and a few, Liam will admit himself, below par performances. He hasn't really been happy. Was that Rovers performance your best of the season as a team?
I'd imagine so. You know, you can't really argue with, obviously it's our first win, so you'd have to probably say it was our best performance. But like you said there, we haven't been performing on a regular basis. You know, we've had a poor start, and to be fair, so but we knew there was always that belief in the change room. Like, there was never a day where we'd come in after a game and everyone's sulking and, you know, have their heads down. We'd always come in and be positive, because we knew ourselves that we were just going through a bit of a blip, and we knew that eventually it would click for us. And, we did have to wait a bit longer probably than we wanted. And, you know, looking back now, we'd probably say to ourselves, if we had of, you know, sort of gotten a few results at the start of the season, we would be up at the top half of the table by now. But I suppose that's all, you know, if, ands and buts. But I think it's important for us now to just try and use that win and use the momentum to go into the game against Bowes now on Friday and hopefully get another win.
Yeah, it's important you mentioned there with Bowes, because they did something similar in that they didn't have the best start of the seasons, and then they, you know, week is a long time of football. They beat Bray and then they got a good win in Limerick, and all of a sudden the table takes on a really different complexion. I suppose for now, Pat's players probably aren't looking at the table, because it still makes for pretty grim reading.
Yeah, like, I think the table, you know, this early on in the season, it's not really a true reflection of how things are going to be at the end of the season, you know. But I think it is important for us now to go into Bowes and really give her a good shot, because Bowes are not going to be any pushover. You know, they're on, as you said, they're on good form now, and every game in this league is a tough game. And I think, bar, you know, maybe your Dundalk and your Cork, you know, who are going to be up the top, and everyone knew that at the, you know, before the season was going to start. But I think everyone, you know, in the league has the potential to beat each other. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be a tough season for everyone, and it'll be interesting to see now on Friday night if we can carry that momentum into the game.
And from your own personal point of view, I know towards the end of your spell in England, you kind of bounced around a couple of clubs. Are you excited about putting down roots at Pats and kind of getting out of that thing of being in different clubs every couple of months?
Yeah, definitely. I think that was a big reason and a big sort of relief for me coming home. A lot of people ask me, like, oh, would you have not stayed and would you not try to look for another club? But to be honest with you, I was getting a bit frustrated and a bit, I was falling out of love with the game being in England, because I was, like you said, travelling around and short contracts and just not really knowing where your future is going to lie. And it's not a very secure feeling. And I think coming home now, I'm at home, my family, my friends, and I've, you know, sort of signed a full season at Pats. And I think it's going to be an important year for me if I want to get back to kind of where I was and back to enjoying football the way I used to, you know.
Yeah, you're still only young. I mean, you're 21. We talked about kind of putting down roots there. How important is it to try and get a run in the team from a personal point of view and build on making a pretty important cameo?
Personally, it's. I said it before, you know, like a lot of the lads in our changing room, like, it's a great group of lads, and I think we all sort of, we know what part you play in the team, and it's not really about, you know, who's going to play every week, and it's about whoever is in the team is going to do their part for the team. And I'm not overly worried about how much I'm going to play, or, you know, from a personal point of view, I'm kind of gone back to the way of, I'd like to just, you know, get that winning feeling again, whether it's me on the pitch or off the pitch. You know, it's a team game, and if we're winning every week, you know, it'll put a smile on my face, and I'm sure the rest of the lads.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose when we're talking about the stability, I think in what, the 2014 season, between 2014-15, you probably had, in terms of loan spells, maybe three or four different clubs. As a player, how frustrating is that when you're going between different managers and different ways of playing? It must be very, very difficult to try and, you know, fit yourself as a round peg into a load of different shaped holes, square holes, triangle holes and stuff.
Yeah, it is hard. And I think a lot of people, you know, don't realise that. And it's, you know, you're going into one manager's plans and you have to adapt to the way he wants you to play. And then all of a sudden you're not there anymore and you're in a different team. And then you're trying to adapt again. And I think a lot of football and form and is based on having a good run of games. And it does take a while, you know. Like, there is obviously people who are going to go straight in, can make an immediate impact. But in overall football, it does take a while for, you know, players to adapt to a certain way. And I think that kind of shows with, you know, us as a squad this year at Pats, we didn't quite gel the way we wanted to, maybe, on the pitch. And I think now finally we're starting to understand the way, you know, everybody plays and the way we can beat teams, you know. So,
is it down the road that would you have ambitions to make it back in England, or would you prefer to just enjoy your football in Ireland for now and leave that chapter behind you for now?
I get asked this a lot. There's not really, I can't really answer it, to be honest. It's one of those where I'm at that stage now where I just want to enjoy football and get back to kind of the way I used to enjoy it, because I never, you know, obviously I grew up hoping that, like, wanting to be a footballer, but I never actually thought it would happen. And, like, when I went to England then, it's kind of, it becomes this surreal, you know, life where you dreamt it, but you never quite thought it was going to happen. And I think when I look back on that now, I'm grateful for the experience. And if I was to go back, it would be, if I got the opportunity to go back, I definitely would go back. But, you know, as I said, for now, I just have to kind of get back to enjoying the way I play football, and, you know, and if that means playing in Ireland for a few years, well, then so be it.
Yeah, I think I think young players don't realise as well, it's not the be-all and end-all to get over there by 18 or you're done for. There's no hope. You look at, I mean, the lads at the moment, Andy Boyle, Daryl Horgan, they might feature for Ireland against Iceland as well. They are pretty late bloomers, if you think in terms of their move to England in their mid-20s. But staying in Ireland, playing for points, getting that confidence up, not bouncing around the leagues, not working under different managers, not being sent out on loan here and there, it actually makes a big difference to players, doesn't it? I mean, a lot of them would be disappointed if they weren't out of Dublin at 16, 17, 18. But when you look at even taking those two as an example, Andy Boyle and Daryl Horgan, between their times at in Galway, Andy Boyle started at Shells as well before going on to Dundalk. You can make a proper career in the league before going on to bigger or better things.
Yeah, and I think that's what, you know, a lot of people are starting to realise now, is that it's not the be all and end all if you're not over there by the time you're, you know, 17, 18. And I think in many ways it's actually too young to be going over, like in some cases, because you're not, nobody, not, like, you've still got a lot of years to develop. And, you know, like you said, Andy Boyle and Daryl Horgan, and, you know, they'd be kind of at their peak now, and obviously they're going to develop now being over in England. But, you know, managers, that's what you're going to get from them. You know, seeing managers are going to see what they're doing week in, week out in the League of Ireland, and they know that that's exactly what they're going to do for them. Whereas when you go over when you're younger, you know, managers sort of try and develop you in their way, and sometimes it doesn't work out, and that's just football, I suppose. But I think now, like, obviously the league is getting a lot of recognition, and there is players, and people are sort of, you know, managers from England are sort of recognising that there is talent over here, and you know, it's really good coverage for the league.
And just before we let you go, I mean, it is a massive Dublin derby. You probably enjoyed the taste of the Dublin derby. You got the last day, a nice way to be introduced to it was coming off the bench and getting that goal. But the Bowes game, what have your teammates told you about playing Bowes? What's their own experiences? Have you been asking much?
We haven't really spoke about it this week, to be honest, in the change room. I think we're obviously going to train today later on, where we might, you know, sort of start shaping up and doing a bit of work on Bowes. But I've played Bowes before, you know, and it's a massive club. Like, I've, you know, grew up kind of supporting Bowes, to be honest, when I was a kid. Like, I used to go to Daly Mount and watch games, and I'm looking forward to it personally. You know, Dublin derbies are always big games that, you know, you watch and you see the likes of Rovers Bowes games and Pats and Rovers games, and they're always games that you want to play in. And so hopefully now we can go into this and, you know, come out the other end with a win and make it all that better.
Who in the family is the Bowes fan that got you up to Daly Mount?
No, it was no one in the family, to be honest. It was just a couple of my friends when we were younger. We used to just, you know, go to Daly Mount and watch Bowes, and it was I never ended up a diehard Bowes fan, like, but it was just something to do with your Friday night. But I did enjoy it, like, and I think going to watch the league from a young age, like, I did know, you know, what was in the league. So then when eventually I started playing, and it was for me, I think I was 17 when I started playing the league. It was a good feeling for me personally.
Did you have a favourite Bowes player?
Back in the day, you'd probably have to say the likes of Glenn Crowe, Jason Bourne, you know.
Do you model any part of your game off those two strikers?
No, I think if you look at what they've done in the League of Ireland, like, you know, it speaks for itself, and the two of them are prolific goal scorers. But I you know, you go out and you try and play your own way every week, and I suppose times have changed now, and look, as I said, if I can do my part to help the team every week, and, you know, I'd be happy.
You'd be doing well if you got anything near what J.O.'s got and what Glenn Crowe got in his career. Are you still friends with those Bowes lads? Are you still mates? Will they be at the game?
Yeah, I'd say they will. A good few of my friends would support the League of Ireland, you know, and I'm sure they'll be at the match, probably shouting abuse at me.
Well, look, I'm sure it's something you're well able to handle. Do they come to a lot of your matches?
Yeah, my friends would always try and, you know, get to a lot of the games. Like, a couple of them were at the game on Saturday. Actually, one of them's a Rovers fan, so he wasn't too happy with me. But
I'd say he hasn't talked to you this week, has he?
Ah, he's been all right. He said just because it was me, he doesn't mind. But no, I think, you know, it's good to have that banter and have you know, some of your friends sort of, you know, supporting different clubs, and it's, you know, it's something to look back and talk about, you know.
Yeah, you can send him the clips on WhatsApp. I'm sure he'd be delighted to see that goal over and over and over again. Josh, thanks so much for talking to us on the League of Ireland podcast, and all the best on the big game in the Dublin Derby against Bowes. Thank you so much.
No worries, cheers. Thanks very much.
Yeah, some really interesting thoughts there from Josh O'Hanlon, and it is nice to see a player so happy to be home, but when you look at the clubs he was bounced around on loan when he did get to England, it wasn't a particularly enjoyable thing. And I think there's a really good lesson, Jamie, in that interview for any young player listening, because I know we have a couple of players, not just League of Ireland players, but players who play in 19s and 17s teams that will take an interest in the podcast and listen to these lads. It's good advice, because too often players get wrapped up in getting out of here as soon as possible. It's like a badge of honour. I went to Bournemouth at 16 and I got snapped up, and they paid €20,000 for me, and players think that that's the be all and end all, and they might ever feature for a reserve team or first team. So it's important to, I always think, play for points in a team in matches that matter than being bounced around on loan. And it's something I think a lot of young players can listen to and take something from.
And the other thing is that they can actually live in their house with their mum and dad if they're lucky enough, and have their own bed and their own mates and their own life. And that is something that, and Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat now are the devil in terms of lads in the UK, and that they put up stuff on Facebook playing on the football pitch and it gets 500 likes and everything looks brilliant. But when they spend 8 hours every day in their own room and their digs on Netflix and on FaceTime and not talking to anybody, they don't put that on Facebook.
No.
Because it's not a happy time for them. And, you know, the example which I know you used with Josh there of Andy Boyle and Daryl Horgan, Chris Forrester, there's so many we can mention
going
who go
late.
Over as adults and still suffer, but are now big enough, as you said, they've played for points, they've played in big football matches here where there's pressure, there's people's jobs on the line, there's fans who want to win.
But they're proven as well. Yeah. That's the big thing. When Josh O'Hanlon went over to Bournemouth, he wasn't proven, really. Andy Boyle has proved that he can play in teams in the Champions League, in the Europa League, at arguably a higher level than some of the Championship teams, as has Daryl Horgan. And not only have they had impacts on games, but they have been consistent performers. So I think that it's very, very important for lads to look and think, you know, even Roy Keane, I remember in his first book, he was saying that when he wasn't picked to go to England by a certain age, he was pissed off and grumpy all the time because he was watching players that were inferior, in his view, going over because they were a bit taller and a bit stronger. But I think players might be time to reevaluate, because how often do we see a lad back here by 21, 22?
Well, that's the stats. The stats are not very much in favour of lads going over and getting a second contract and then having to come back to the League of Ireland and feel in some ways like they're a failure even though they're not, and then trying to prove themselves again. But at the same time, if you're 16 and you're offered the chance to go and play professional football and you turn it down and the chance never comes again, you're always thinking, what if? So it's a very hard decision.
It's a very tough decision, but I think it would favour the person who wants to stick it out and do it properly. It can be very hard if you're not ready for that. We saw Dylan Connolly go to Ipswich, and as he says himself, he just wasn't ready.
Yeah.
So he went there, he was a little bit older than 16, but he went there, he had a season under his belt at Shells, a decent season where he played well, he had a couple of trials in one or two really, really good clubs, as well as Ipswich, and he went over and it just wasn't for him, and he was back here. And I would say in the next year, if even a year, he'd be back over in England, because he's got that bit of maturity, he's had managers work with him that value him and that really want to develop him. I think a lot of these England clubs, if you're not the finished product when you get there at 17, 18, they're not going to put time into polishing you.
And the interesting thing is, actually, if you see, you know, the academies in the UK, a lot of the players get a number for their gear. You might be like number 97, number 103. And that's what a lot of them are. They're numbers to people. They're not actual people.
No.
They are people, obviously, but you know what I mean? They're
not
a number.
Viewed like that.
And if the number doesn't fit into the current, whatever it might be with the club, and they're not playing at a certain level, that number's just struck off the list after their contract and good luck.
And you're talking to Josh there. I mean, the point he was making is, He had four loan moves in the space of 2 years. I mean, that's not a long time in
your whole
club.
Life. I know.
You're relocating your whole life. Yeah. Playing for managers that want to do something different. So one manager might want you to be the main man and everything will be long ball, everything to you. You might work with a manager that plays two up top and wants everything into the striker's feet.
Yeah.
How do you change your game every few managers? I'd say it is an absolute nightmare. So it's really good to see him back at home and, as he says himself, happy to be home and enjoying it again.
Yeah, Darren. And speaking of changing their game, is something Shamrock Rovers will want to do and change some results with four defeats in their opening six league matches. Just two wins. That was against Bohemians, a 2-1 victory at Tallaght Stadium, and a 2-1 win in Galway. Gary Shaw getting both goals. Galway almost came back to get a point. And we're delighted to be joined now on 98FM's League of Ireland podcast by a man who'll be playing on Friday in Tallaght Stadium at Shamrock Rovers against Finn Harps for an 8 p.m. start. Daniel Devine, how are you?
Yeah, I'm great, Jay. Thanks for being in. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for joining us, Dan. First of all, we look back briefly on the defeat to St. Pat's last weekend, last Saturday, a game I was at in Richmond Park. Shamrock Rovers 1-0 up through Gary Shaw, went down to 10 men when Sean Heaney was sent off for two yellows, and Pat's managed to come back in the end with two goals to win the game. Your views on that defeat?
I thought we were in control of the game right up until the sending off. I thought we were very comfortable. I thought we had a lot of ball, and I thought it was only a matter of time before we got two or three. And then obviously, as I said, the sending off changes the game completely, turned the game on its head, and then I think we just sat back and tried to soak up all the pressure, and unfortunately didn't pay off. We thought we struggled to get out of our own half then, as soon as we went down to 10 men. Then again, I thought the two goals we gave away, two crosses, they're just kind of two sloppy goals, and that's kind of been the story of our year so far. I think most goals we conceded have been sloppy goals. Not one goal really has been like teams penetrating us or good football to get in behind us. I think most of them have been crosses or corners or just not picking up, sloppy defending. So I think if we got that right, I think the results will change.
Yeah, Dan, just interesting you mentioned about, you know, the team playing quite deep, and when you were down to 10, the manager made a couple of changes. Sam Bone came on as a defensive midfield player and Ronan Finn went to play on the right of midfield. I think Stephen also brought on Dave McAllister for James Duna to try and, you know, make things a little bit tighter in midfield with a 4-4-1. As a defender, how is that to play in when you've, as you said, you were ahead and you know, had a decent amount of the ball in the first half of the game, all of a sudden to have to totally change the mindset and defend so deep? And as you said, you know, Pats did score from two crosses, which I know will be disappointing from everybody in the defensive point of view as well.
Well, as you said, when they brought on Dave McAllister and Sam Bone, I think it was good from our point of view, because Dave McAllister, I think, is one of the hardest working players I've ever seen. So when I seen him coming on, I was delighted to have him in front of us, and I thought Sam done very well. I think that might have been his first league appearance. I thought he was very good when he came on. And I thought they had loads of football, but I didn't think they were able to break us down. So I thought we would hold out for the win. But as you said, two crosses from our point of view, very disappointed around them kind of goals. As I said, it's kind of been the story of our season so far. We haven't, all the goals we've kind of given away have been sloppy, and we've been involved in a few of them myself, and it's just need to get them mistakes out of our game and probably be more clinical in the final third, and the results change, I think.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair assessment of how the Shamrock Rovers games have gone so far this season, Dan. But as always with football, there's another match to look forward to and to try and get some sort of a run going. Four defeats in the opening six matches. Talk to me about the importance of a home win against Finn Harps in Tallaght this coming Friday.
Well, I think it's absolutely massive today. The fans have been brilliant every game. We're out there, away or home. They've found up on our numbers, and we need to start producing, getting results from now. It's all very well playing nice football and having lots of football, but if you're not getting results, it doesn't matter, isn't it? So it's a results business, as I say. It's a massive finale, huge on Friday. It's the most win game really for us.
Yeah, Dan, just to get your views on the situation so far at Shamrock Rovers, and we've spoken about, you know, a lot of the games where maybe the defending hasn't been what you would like, and maybe not as creative in the final third as you would hope so far, but four defeats in six isn't an ideal start for anybody, especially not a club like Shamrock Rovers, who are in the process of trying to build something there. I know you're a new player in the group, but is there a small concern in the group that there's been so many defeats so early in the season?
I think, yeah, well, any team loses four out of the first six games, there'd be concern around the camp. Just need to stick together, really, not panic, and try to turn these results on the head. There's no match where we've lost 3 or 4 nils, and literally by one goal we've lost every game, fine margins. That could easily been 2 wins and 4 draws. Not as panicking as much, but just because just need to get them fine margins sorted, really. As you said, it's a must win game Friday, so that's the feeling around the camp.
Yeah, because it's been a case in recent years with Shamrock Rovers, certainly with the previous managers, when Stephen Kenny was there and when Trevor Crawley was there and when the previous, most recent one, Nutsy Fenlon, was there as well. Once there was a couple of defeats, the attendance started to drop off, and you could sense in Tallaght this air of, of discontent among the fans. And I know it won't happen this early, Dan, but it is important to try and pick up a couple of wins, because if it carries on into 8 or 10 games where you're winning and losing every now and again, it makes things difficult for everybody at the club to try and get some momentum going. Is that something you've felt so far, or do you still feel that there's a confidence among everybody, including the fans, that the season will get going hopefully soon from your point of view?
I think we definitely sort of get on. I think we're playing nice football. I think the fans know that, but it's just the results are not going our way. Just the little things, fine margins, are not going our way. Top of the table, Cork, they've won 6 out of 6. So I thought the second half we had them pinned back. We in most of football. Right up until they scored, they scored in the 85th minute around then. I think even before that, we had them pinned back. I thought it was only a matter of time before we were going to get a goal. Graham Burke hits the crossbar. I don't want to make excuses, but it's literally fine margins. I think we're not far away. I think a couple of wins on the bounce, I think we get going. So that's the last 4 or 5 games of these of the teams you haven't played are massive for us, to get pick up points.
And that begins, Dan, this Friday in Tala. As a centre-back, How much do you enjoy a physical battle? I'm not sure if you've ever played against Finn Harps before, Dan. You probably haven't, but a very organised team, but shall we say, do a little battle and a few long balls into the box?
Yeah, I don't mind that. That's what I'm there for, the head of all anyway. So, I'm looking forward to a good battle against Finn Harps. I was asking the lads during the week what they like, and this is actually how you describe them there. They'd be organised and like a battle. So I think we're players we have, we're well able to mix it up between playing football and changing into a battle. So that doesn't bother us at all. So I'm very looking forward to the match on Friday now. And as you said, just need the games to keep coming to try to get points on the board after the defeat, isn't it?
From the point of view of trying to score more goals, Dan, and I think that's been a concern, certainly that I think I've been at 4 of your 6 matches, and maybe the attacking players, the likes of your Brandon Miles and your Meenans and your Ronan Finns, probably haven't had as much of an impact in a positive point of view in the attacking end that maybe they would have liked. And I know the strikers have kind of flipped in and out with Michael O'Connor, and Shawzy has started the last couple of games, and Sean Boyd as well. How important for those players to get going? I didn't as well mention Graham Burke, who I thought was the best player on the pitch from Shamrock Rovers' point of view in Richmond as well. But how important from the point of view going the other way that maybe those attacking players start to have more of a positive influence on the games?
Yeah, it's important. Obviously, both ends of the pitch, I think it's very important. But if we at our end of the pitch defensive-wise, if we pick up in the box or stop giving away goals, we pick up 4 points. Instead of having 4 losses, But as you said, I think we need to be more clinical in the final third. And I think we definitely have the players there who have it in the locker. He'll be clinical. We train them every day. The fantastic training and abilities there. So I think we just think it's a matter of time before I think that we owe a team a 3 or 4 nil bashing with the amount of football we've had. Just can't get the goals in.
Well, certainly when you have players like Graham Burke in your team, he can certainly help create some chances in the attacking area of the pitch. Dan, from a personal point of view, how are you finding life in the League of Ireland? I know your story will be quite familiar to most people. You left for England in 2009 to join Aston Villa and had a couple of very serious injuries across your time. You've been home now for a little while. You're actually studying in IT Tala, doing a business management degree. You're in third year there, and you came home and you spent some time in the Leinster Senior League as well. So how are you finding life back in the pro game as such, playing for Rovers in the League of Ireland?
It's fantastic to be back playing football every day. You take it for granted when you come back home and you're working a part-time job and going to college and getting minimum wage, not getting paid to kick a football around the field anymore. So I'm absolutely delighted to be back playing. That's hopefully going to pay back the club for taking a gamble on me, because I was out of the game, as I said, for a couple of years, and just started back playing Leinster Senior League last year, which is, if it wasn't for a charity orchard, lads, I wouldn't have been back playing football at all. So Deco Heavey and Tony Caban and the lads down that club for getting me back playing.
Yes, a legend in Mr. Declan Heavey. I know Deco personally, a very good guy in the underage game here in the League of Ireland, and has since moved to Cherry Orchard and doing a very good job, and lots of former League of Ireland lads playing for that Cherry Orchard team as well. Dan, how have you actually found the transition back to being a full-time footballer again? I know you don't train every day because of your knee issues, and you're not the only one with Luke Byrne and Paul Corrie at Rovers as well that have troublesome knees. But how have you found that you're now back playing full-time and eating properly, recovering properly and preparing for a professional football match every Friday?
Fantastic. Like, as you said, when I first came back, I was in college full-time, so it switched me across to part-time, so I could play football in the mornings every day. And for the first 2 years, I was doing the other way around. I was in college full-time, I was working during the summer, and my breaks off, so to be kicking a football, it's unbelievable, like, to be back playing again full-time. Like, 2 years out of the game, you really do miss it. Like, you take it for granted. That life, that lifestyle of getting paid to be exercising every day, basically, and keeping fit and sitting healthy.
Dan, just bring us back to the time you spent out of the game and the reasons behind this. You've twice dislocated your knee, which sounds awfully painful. I've had a couple of torn hamstrings and a couple of sore ankles, but I've never done anything as serious as that. Once on the pitch, and the second time as well, due to an attack on the street.
Yeah, just got first time was training first time doing shuttle runs, and went to run, turned, and I could hear pop down. Everyone just stopped running and looked over at me, and kneecap was just out to the side. So that was the first time I'd done it. The second time, as you said, I was attacked by a couple of lads, and one of them just knew how to take down a big lad and kicked me straight in the knee, and I was feeling again exact same noise as I heard previous when I done it. So I knew straight away I was gone. So I contacted the club and they brought me over and got an operation next week with Andy Williams in London. So that put me out for
absolute scumbags as well, you know. And it's something that we, and it's happened a couple of times as well to rugby players and players playing in the GAA scene as well, that, you know, you depend on your body and your legs to be able to play the sport and to work and to earn money, Dan, and for someone just to jump you on the street, and I know we're not going to go into the circumstances, but for someone just to do that when you've had a serious injury before as well, it's shocking to think about.
Yeah, as you said, like, that's our legs are our tools of the trade, so like, for someone to take that away from me, and it was devastating at the time, but like, I'm over that now. I think when you go through a bad knee injury, you come back better and stronger, like. And I'm just looking at Luke Byrne there, coming back from his injury, and looks very fit, very strong, and mentally very strong. Like, so it was like, it's obviously terrible when you get your knee done in, but the silver lining in the cloud is that you come back stronger. And it's evident when looking at players in our club, like, come back from long-term injuries, like.
Yeah, Dan, and just finally, I mentioned you're in third year in IT Tala, doing a business management degree and pursuing a career as a professional footballer again, and also getting an education behind you. What's the long-term plan, if you have one? I know at the minute you're playing the football and you're going to have your degree in your back pocket hopefully soon as well. Have you any thoughts yet on is it going back to England? Is it playing in the league for the next 10 years here? Is it, you know, playing and maybe getting a job? I know we spoke to Ronan Finn when he went back to Shamrock Rovers. One of his reasons was that he hoped to do a little bit of work to plan for after a career as well.
I feel like when I stop playing, you realise how short a career can be with injuries, and even if you don't, even if you're blessed and don't get injured the whole career, like, you're still finished. But yeah, 30s, mid-30s, pretty doing well. So I decided as soon as I came back, and I said to myself before anything, and that if I ever came back, I'd do education no matter what. So like, when I was able to switch my course night time and got back playing football full time, I jumped on board that, because I wasn't going to drop my education again. Like, I wasn't going to take that gamble. So I was able to do a night time, very grateful. And hopefully, as you said, get me degree next year, and at least have that in the back pocket, got to fall back on. Like, so I'm not sure myself how many years I've left at this level, and in regards to come back across the water to England, I'm just taking a game by game really at the moment, Jamie, like, to see what level we can get back to myself. And in regards to career after football, or after my degree, I'm not sure. I think they're going towards the accountancy side of things, so I'll see how that goes now next year after I get that degree, hopefully, and see if I'll know more about myself and where I am with football at that stage as well.
Yeah, great to see a footballer as well having a plan for education and a life after the game, because League of Ireland players, as we know, unfortunately don't earn enough over their career to be able to survive once they've retired. That is the voice of Shamrock Rovers defender Dan Devine. Dan, thanks a million for your time, looking back on the defeat to St. Pat's, and ahead as well to the big game in Talla on Friday against Finn Harps. Dan, thanks a million and the best of luck on Friday.
All right, thanks, mate.
Shamrock Rovers centre-back Daniel Devine there, speaking to myself, Jamie Moore, alongside Darren Cleary on 98FM's League of Ireland podcast this week. Darren, Shamrock Rovers just 2 wins and 4 defeats in their opening 6 games. I mentioned in the intro about this being an almost must-win for Rovers. It kind of is against the Finn Harps team, who many tip to be in the relegation fight. They're a very, very tough team. They got obviously a last-minute winner to beat Sligo Rovers last weekend, but Rovers, 4 defeats in 6, it's an important one for them to go and win at home.
It is. I think it is an important period for the club in terms of maturing and changing, because they have a very, very young squad, which is something Stephen Bradley has touched on, and a young and inexperienced manager. And at the moment, the pressure there is very, very high. And like you say, almost every game is a must win, because they get antsy up in Rovers. The fans do. If things aren't going well, I mean, Trevor Crawley, he wasn't a particularly, statistic-wise, he wasn't a very poor Rovers manager. He had a decent run of it, but they got frustrated with the amount of draws he presided over. And already you can start to see that pressure filtering through the manager in some of his post-match comments. I know his video with you, Jamie, a couple of weeks ago after the Cork game received an awful lot of criticism from Cork fans over his comments about Cork, in which he said they were not a great side.
And a so-called top team.
A so-called top team. That kind of, I'm not going to say bitterness, because it's not full bitterness, but it's not the best advised comments to make. And even the last day we saw after the defeat to St. Pat's, where they had a man sent off, instead of speaking about their performance and the red card, it was the FAI's fault for not moving the game. Now, obviously, you understand that they've got players who have international commitments, and you think that something more should have been done to accommodate them. Sometimes it's not done, and it's not the FAI's fault that he picks underage internationals. Every manager, it is their remit and their responsibility to assemble and pick their squad. Yes, Rovers are deciding from their point of view to promote youth, but that doesn't mean that they get special treatment. I don't see why they would.
No, it was interesting as well, and I saw a tweet today saying that, you know, Michael O'Connor signed from Dundalk only a couple of months ago. So he's not come through the system as such at Rovers. But I do take the point. I actually think that the game should have been called off. I think that if you do have 2 players in an Ireland squad, if it's a rule for under 21s, it should be a rule for 19s, 17s, 15s. It should be a rule if they're in your first team. And I believe the Shamrock Rovers did try to get the game off and didn't have much success. But as you said, maybe immediately after the match. It's
a difficult time to try and string a sentence together that doesn't seem tinged with anger and disappointment. And obviously he was being honest, and you can't fault the guy for being honest. I do think that there are times when you might look over the expanse of it, and there was probably two needless bookings in terms of the sending off.
Yeah, Sean Heaney, yeah, particularly the second one when you're on a yellow. You could see it. I was at the game.
Yeah, you don't dive
Conan Byrne
in,
takes the heavy
feet,
touch. And you can see it's coming. And you can see there's a brilliant photo.
The first one is worse for me.
Yeah,
the first
back.
One is
yeah.
Silly. He's so far from both goals. It's absolutely
there's
unnecessary.
Actually a very good photo of Sean Heaney on his knees, head in hands, the Rovers fans all behind him, and the red card in. I just love good photos.
As a manager, if I was a manager, and I'm not, I have a much easier job. I just get to sit here and talk about it. But as a manager, I would not take the tact of, we've just been beaten by a team we shouldn't lose against. A team that have a torrid start, and you should be going there and should be beating them well, judging by the St. Pat's results. And you're moaning because the game was called off, or wasn't called off. The game went ahead. Look, this, you know this game is going to go ahead. You make your plans and you make your provisions, and that's why you build a squad. This has happened to a number of teams over the years. Not every team gets every game they want called off. That's just part of life. I just don't understand why that was blamed, when clearly the red card was the turning point. Anyone who was at the game said it. You were at the game. The red card was the turning point. That was the issue. Yet we're led to believe that the FAI was the problem. Obviously, you understand him protecting his players, but you can start to see that pressure seeping in, and it mightn't be advised to blame it on everyone else when it's not going your way.
Yeah, speaking of left-backs for Shamrock Rovers, I mentioned as well to Luke Byrne, who played 45 minutes in an under-19 friendly game in Talla on Saturday before the Pats game, 11 months to the day he did his ACL.
Brilliant to see.
Cruciate ligament, down in Cork. So well done to Luke getting back on the pitch after a long battle with the
injury. They'll really need him. What a player he was.
Yeah, and it might mean they can play Trevor Clark left wing also, which would add to their attacking options as well. A couple of other talking points. Darren in the Premier Division. Cork beating Dundalk 2-1, 6 points ahead now after 6 matches. And Sean Maguire, who didn't score, surprise, surprise, but 2 assists and 2 brilliant passes. The second one, particularly the through ball for the second goal for Shepherd, was perfectly weighted, perfectly timed. And although you thought Dundalk might come back late in the game, a big win for Cork City. They've beaten him in the FAI Cup final, in the President's Cup now, and 6 ahead after 6 matches. And we said recently that it's always been Dundalk who've been ahead and Cork who've been chasing them. For the first time in these 3 or 4 seasons that they've been the Arsenal and Man United of the Premier League in terms of those battles, it's Cork ahead in front of 7,000 internationals.
Just going to say, it was such a great occasion. People moan about international weeks and no Premier League. I, for one, loved it. I watched it on the TV.
Yeah.
I thought it was brilliant to see fans queuing up outside Turner's Cross an hour before kickoff to get into the ground. It was absolutely wonderful. A fitting game for a great occasion. And it was great to see. And I mean, Cork and Dundalk have been the team that have led the way in so many respects in the League of Ireland, in terms of quality, in terms of football, in terms of crowds. And it did not disappoint. It was a really, really good game. Dundalk made a game of it. Despite Cork being the better side, probably from start to finish, getting the goal back in it, certainly made it up for a nervy finish. But yeah, it was a brilliant occasion, brilliant spectacle for the League of Ireland. And I think the kind of game that we need to convince people that aren't interested, no, this is good. It was brilliant to hear Josh O'Hanlon say that he used to just go to games. No one in his family made him. Him and his mates just took it upon themselves.
So that's how I became a fan, and you.
More people should do the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so, so important. You have this wonderful thing on your doorstep that can make your night. I remember leaving a ground a couple of weeks ago. My team drew, but we hadn't drawn in a long time, so it felt a bit like a win. And I was in great form. And the kind of form only football can give you, where it will dictate how you feel for the rest of the evening. And you get excited on the Friday and you're interested in going to games. And I genuinely do, it sounds so snobby, but I feel sorry for anyone who doesn't experience that. Because you don't experience that watching sport on television. You cannot connect to something unless you're there, unless you feel it, unless you sway with the crowd, unless you jump when the goal goes in or put your head in your hands when you miss. It's... you cannot beat it. This is a love letter to League of Ireland football.
Well, I am about to take out that 35 seconds of audio and send it to Fran Gavin of the FAI and say, Fran, put this in your next promo. Inspirational stuff from 98FM's Darren Cleary on the best League of Ireland podcast in the business, 98FM's League of Ireland podcast. It's Jamie and Darren here. 2 more quick talking points from the Premier Division last week. Paul O'Connor, you absolute legend. Goal of the season contender for Limerick against Bray, a 1-0 win. Wowzers, what a strike.
Well,
the pitch in the Carlow looks fantastic. And a big, big win for Martin Russell and Limerick to get them going again after a couple of defeats and that in a row.
Yeah, they had such a solid start to the season, and then they've been edged 1-0 here and there.
Yeah,
so they're tight games. They're just getting done, unlocked once or twice, a little bit of lapse of concentration, and that's where they're being cut out. But they're a quality side, and I don't know, I couldn't see them being in danger at the tail end of the season.
Yeah, Brendan Clark made his first starting goal for Limerick and was apparently very, very impressive indeed. And Sligo Rovers, bottom of the table, defeated again the other night 2-1 by Finn Harps, a late penalty. Quite disappointing from their point of view. Interesting to keep an eye on that. With the three teams going down, they've only got 4 points from their opening 6 matches. And our final talking point on the Premier Division is the fixtures for this coming Friday. All 6 games on Friday night. And a big, big match for Derry City, Darren. Their first match post Ryan McBride. Emotional scenes, no doubt, up in Buncrana in McGinn Park coming up at this coming Friday. Bray Wanderers, the visitors, for a 7:45 kick-off. And not sure exactly how Ryan will be remembered, but we would assume there will be either a minute's silence or a minute's applause. And
he's been remembered so wonderfully around the league.
That Derry hasn't played. And I said hello to Kenny Shields. He was in Richmond Park on Saturday watching the match. He was also there and went along to Bray to watch Bray against Limerick and trying to get on with his life as well. So the best of luck to everybody Derry for that game. The other 3:45 kickoffs. It's Limerick against Cork in the Markets Field. Galway United hosting Sligo Rovers. A big game at the bottom. That's them in AIM in DC Park. And Bowes against St Pat's at 7:45 in Dalymount. At 7:30, it's Dundalk against Drogheda United. A big local derby up there in Oriel Park. And at 8 p.m, Tallaght Stadium, the venue for Shamrock Rovers against Finn Harps. It is now time for our first division focus. And the big game this weekend is Shells against Wexford at Talca Park. And delighted to be joined by Shelburne's goal scoring defender, Derek Prendergast. Del Boy, how are you, sir?
Very good, thanks very much. Yeah, yourself?
Good, thanks, Derek. Your first win of the season last Saturday in Athlone Town Stadium, a game in which you scored, and a big win for Shells, a 4-1 victory. Let's firstly look back on that match and an important win, having not won in the previous five matches.
Yeah, exactly. It's just getting the monkey off your back is your first win. The last couple of games we've played well. We probably deserved the win, so probably playing on our mind just to get the first win over and done with. So it was good to come against Athlone on Friday, so hopefully we can push on and get many more now.
We haven't been able to see the goal, of course, because Soccer Republic don't do First Division highlights, so please relive it for us now, Derek.
It was a little tap in from about 6 yards. One of the lads shot, took about 3 or 4 defensions. Kind of wrong footed the keeper, he got a hand on it, so I was just literally there to tap it home, so nothing to write home about.
Yes, but of course, 2 goals the previous weekend against Waterford United to secure a 2-2 draw, Del, so you've been quite effective in the box on attacking set pieces so far this season.
Yeah, just the ball fell nicely for me against Waterford in the first game. The first goal was from a set piece, so from 6 yards out again, I'm prolific from 6 yards. The second goal then was just, we went on a break. We kind of had men forward, so we just kept going, and the ball came back out to me towards the penalty spot. So, lucky enough, it was an important goal just to get us the point and just to keep the momentum of unbeaten run going.
Yeah, Derek, just explain to me a little bit about the set pieces and how important they've been. I know for you when you played for Bowes, when you had people like Lorcan Fitzgerald whipping them in for you, and at Shells, your manager Owen Heary has, you know, throughout his own career as a player, been a big threat on set pieces, and they're an important part of the game, especially in the First Division where games can be quite tight and, you know, there's not much difference between the teams. Set pieces can become quite vital in both boxes.
They can, of course. We were actually done against Waterford from a set piece. Kenny Brown got a free header and scored. It was kind of against the run of play, but that good just goes to show, once the delivery is right and you have good movement, you're always likely to score goals. We have lads who, what would you say, they're very good on the set pieces. They work on them and train, and we have Dale and we have Lano as well. So Dale has been putting in great balls the last couple of weeks, and fortunately for us, they've been falling for us. And that's where we seem to be getting our goals from. So yeah, Owen does work on them in training, defending and also attacking. So it's a very important part of the game, as I'd say at least 50% of our goals so far this year have come from set pieces.
Yeah, the other goals in Athlone, James English opened the scoring, and then 2 strikes from Adam Evans, who's spoke to us on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, Derek, and he's been in quite good form. I think he got the equaliser, late equaliser in Cove as well a couple of weeks ago, so 3 goals for him so far this season. He's a very, very quick player, came home from Burnley, went to Bowes, and has been at Shell since, I think, when Owen came in the midpoint of last season. He's been in the goals for you so far this year. What's he been like?
Adam is great. I played with him at Bowes. He's a good, honest lad. He puts his heart and soul into every game, you know. He always comes off the pitch like he's left nothing on it. He's been very fortunate with the goals, and the lads have set him up well for it, but he has to be in the right place, I suppose, to score them. Himself and James English, they've started the season quite well. I know Adam has the goals. James got his first goal there on Friday night, so hopefully that pushes him on now to get a few. We got some in pre-season. So his confidence is high now with the goal that he got against Athlone. So the two boys are a threat because they're very raw. They're not predictable, if you get me.
Yeah.
Defenders don't know whether they're running in behind or coming short. So we're just happy to have them on our team.
Just a word on Athlone. We spoke with them on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and you know, it's still quite unclear what's going on with the foreign owners and the foreign managers, and they've got about 4 coaches, and they started the season quite well, Derek, and they've had a couple of heavy defeats more recently. What did you make of playing against this new Athlone team with a mix of Irish lads and also these new foreign imports?
Yeah, well, obviously the foreign guys, it's an unknown. You're going in, you've never played against these lads, so they're unpredictable. I thought Athlone actually played quite well the first half, Friday night. He had a guy sent off just before half time. In my eyes, it was never sending off, so we were quite fortunate in that aspect. They have players that can hurt us. Their midfield are very strong. It will take them, obviously, time to gel, because the new guys that have come in, it's going to take them a bit of time to bed in with the Irish lads. But judging by them the other night, I think they will be strong. As I say, they just need a couple of weeks or a couple of more games just to get that gel together, and I'm sure they will pick up points, especially at home. They looked quite solid for the first 45 minutes. It was just unfortunate for them to have the guys sent off, and it gave us that bit more freedom to go and express ourselves. And that's, they got tired towards the end. That's where our goals kind of came from. So I wouldn't be too worried about that loan, as in they will come good, you know.
Yeah, Niall Scullion sent off right in the stroke of half-time when it was in fact 1-1 at that time. Derek, yeah, from Shell's point of view, the first win in five games, as I mentioned, three draws and that hammering 4-0 against UCD in the bowl. I think that was the second match of the season. How much of a relief was it for yourself and the players and Owen Heary to pick up that first win? Because there are big expectations at Talca this season. Owen has signed good players, including yourself, who've moved from the Premier Division to go and play for Shell's in the First Division. So everybody must have been very happy given how poor the start had been, even though I know it was three draws, but still no wins in the first few games.
No, we all, like, every game we've gone into, we've always expected to win. The first game of the season was quite nervous. Both teams are nervous against Longford, one of the favourites, so I think both managers would have been happy with the draw. But as you say, against UCD, we kind of never showed up, and we got punished in the space of, I think they scored our four goals within 20 minutes, so that was probably a kick that we kind of needed, you know, kind of a reality check, as if to say, like, we're not as good as we may think we actually are. Since that game, the lads' attitudes have been spot on. We've always, as I say, going into games looking for the win, but Owen has never panicked. None of the guys have ever panicked. We knew we're good enough to get the win. Now that it did come eventually, as I say earlier on, it will give us the momentum to push on now and get many more wins.
Yeah, that momentum, from your point of view, hopefully begins and, I suppose, carries on against Wexford this coming Friday at Talca Park, Derek. 7:45 kickoff. Wexford been really, really poor so far this season. I've not seen them live, but they're bottom of the table. No wins in five games. You beat them as well 4-2 in the Leinster Senior Cup just before the season started. Anything to be read into that result and your overall thoughts on facing them on Friday in the league?
No, well, you can't read too much into that game. I know it was Leinster Senior Cup, but it was kind of still pre-season. Managers were just giving guys games. We got a great start against them. We went up 4-0 just after half-time. But then they showed a lot of character to get back in the game. They made it quite nervous for us when they got back to 4-2. They were a strong team, so I wouldn't read too much into that game. As you see in the First Division, results every week are crazy. Everyone is picking up points, so I'm sure Wexford's point of view, they're just waiting to turn the corner and get their first win. But for ourselves, we just have to go out and be professional. And all we play as well as we did against Athlone the other day, we're more than capable of getting the win.
Yeah, it's a very different Wexford team, Derek, to the team you would have faced in the Premier League last year when you were playing for Bowes, and they were in the Premier Division. They've lost a lot of their key players. They've obviously lost their manager as well, and as I said, no wins in their opening five games. So everybody at Shells will be fully confident, as you just mentioned there, if you do your stuff and perform to your level, you'll go and try and win the match. How do you feel against this Wexford team that you can go and do that?
Just as I say, once the lads express themselves and just don't let the occasion get to them. Owen has a great blend down there. There's a lot of experience, but there's a lot of young guys, and the young guys are now, they have that kind of freedom that Owen has given them. Go out and play their own game. I think in the first couple of games, they kind of got caught up in playing against the likes of Waterford and Longford, who are kind of the favourites. We just didn't click as a team, but the last couple of games we have played, we're seeing signs of that. So as I say, once Owen gives them the freedom to go and express themselves, I'd have no fear, you know.
How do you see that mix in the team now, Derek? I mean, yourself and, you know, a number of the other senior players, Alan Byrne, Dean Delaney in goal, to name three, and then the mix of younger ones. But even some of those younger ones, the likes of James English, has a lot of experience in the league now and also playing the Leinster Senior. Adam Evans has been in the UK and played, and, you know, other players like those, and that's something Owen said to me on the opening podcast of the season, that he wanted to have a core down the centre of the team of experience, the likes of yourself and Dino and Alan Byrne, and then young, hungry lads in and around that. How have you found that mix and your role within that as one of the senior pros as such?
I actually enjoy it. I like kind of passing on my experience, but my experience is only kind of like years of playing, if you get me. The younger guys, you're kind of just coaching them through when you're kind of under a bit of pressure, when to sit in and when to defend as a unit. That's the kind of experience that you pass on to them. But then you have the likes of Dean Delaney, who's behind you. He's constantly talking. Alan Byrne, then, who's been playing centre mid, penalties in front of ourselves. So it's little bits of information that we are passing on here and there. But once we're in control of the game, as I say, we just have to allow the younger lads and the more flair players, as we have a lot of flair players, we can just let them go and express themselves. As I say, the only kind of information we pass on is like when just to sit or hold back when we're under a bit of pressure. And in fairness to the lads, they are taken on board. They're not kind of listening, they're not kind of turning their nose up and not listening to us. They are taking a lot of the information on board.
Yeah, Derek, just a final two questions. Your view on the First Division overall, as you mentioned, the draw with Longford on the opening night of the season. I saw them beaten 2-0 by UCD on Saturday, and I thought Longford were really, really poor, as in really poor. I was quite disappointed by them. You then had the point in Cove, the draw against Waterford also, and the defeat against UCD. So you've played maybe, you know, three of the other four main contenders, certainly, to go and win this league. It's certainly all to play for. You're only 4 points off the top, even though you've only won once after the five matches. But just your view on the First Division overall, and I think you hit the nail on the head earlier on when you said, you know, the games are so crazy that it can be any score, and the favourites can, you know, and a really good example of this is Pat Devlin and Cabin Teely, who have won three in a row, and at the start of the season again, nobody tipped them to do anything at all.
No, so far, like, playing against UCD, as I say, we let ourselves down, but they were very good. I wouldn't take that away from them. They were probably the best side that we have played so far. Each team we have played, they have a strong core of whether it's attacking or defending. We haven't played Cabin Teely as of yet, but as you say, they are kind of a surprise package. But I know I've played under Pat Devlin before. He'd love that kind of role, as people see him as an outsider underdog. He kind of loves that, and that's probably why they're doing so well. They're not giving them the chance. They're writing them off before a ball's even kicked. So I'm sure he's smiling now after the last couple of results. The league itself, as I say, this is my first time in the league, but previous years, just looking at results, I know Limerick last year was probably a once off of the league was kind of won halfway through the season. But yeah, it's so unpredictable. You kind of don't know what they're facing. You don't know what you're up against. And so far, I'm enjoying it. It is a kind of new kind of learning curve that you're going down to the places like Cove. Cove Ramblers, this pitch was probably the worst pitch that we've ever played football on and ever in League of Ireland. So you're up against these kind of things, you know.
Shelburne centre-back Derek Prendergast joining us on 98FM's League of Ireland podcast this week. And Shell's host Wexford FC... Nearly say Wexford Youth, Wexford FC at Talker Park this coming Friday evening, a 7:45 kickoff. Darren, a big win for Shells at the weekend, 4-1 against Athlone. We discussed it there in depth with Del Boy, but Athlone not doing too well. Shells, from Owen Heary's point of view, an important win for them. It brings them up to 6 points from five games. You're still on minus goal difference, but getting in the goals. And I think that defeat to UCD really, really hit them on the second night of the season.
Set them back because they haven't played as poorly since then, and that was probably the reason Robert Bailey left the club. I don't think he'd played since then. His 25-minute cameo.
No, and I believe he wasn't. I believe he wasn't seen since then. Although Shell's only announced it this week that he was gone. That mutual agreement, Darren.
Mutual agreement. Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it. The most surprising part is he hasn't been sent off in a second spell at Shell's. He's always a good man.
Just taking off.
The double booking.
Yeah. Waterford top of the table now on 10 points from five games. Another win 2-0 against Wexford. Mark O'Sullivan double down in the RSC. At long we spoke about. Cabin Teely, Darren. Three wins in a row for Pat Devlin's team.
They
only won four matches in the whole of last season. And no, I'm not actually having a joke
here. Seasons in their League of Ireland.
Yeah, no, it was four matches in the previous season. It was five matches. So it's nine matches total.
Yeah, I was thinking it was sub-10 anyway.
Yeah, but... You know, on a serious note, they look really, really good. Big win in Longford the previous weekend, and 4-1 against Cove. Joe Doyle, Carl Byrne, Connor Keeley, and Kieran Marty Waters with the goals. They're playing 3-5-2 there, and three at the back. Carl Byrne, right wing back, doing really, really well. He plays for IT Blanchardstown, where I'm actually the soccer manager there. He's a very, very quick player. His nickname is Chopper because he likes a bit of a tackle. Carl Chopper Byrne likes to chop you up in a tackle. He's playing right wing back, scored. They got Evan Galvin, the Galvin twins. Evan Galvin is playing left wing back. And up front, Joe Doyle and Kieran Marty Waters, who, you know, has had a weird couple of years with leaving Rovers, having had a really good spell under Pat Fennan, going to UCD and then going to Cabin Teely. He's obviously quite pally with Pat Devlin, but they're playing him up front, and he's so quick and so mobile that if they play to his strengths and get him in behind, he'll cause teams trouble in either league. And he got the fourth goal. And, you know, the Cavan Teady that we saw the last two seasons, Darren, are not the Cavan Teady now. They've got a stronger squad for sure. They really do. And the results have proven that in the last couple of weeks.
And Pat Devlin was always going to bring that bit of professionalism to anything he's done. During his time at UCD, during his time with Bray, he was always able to get the most out of limited resources. Now, you have to admire what Cabo were doing, because while their resources are limited in the same manner, they're very, very ambitious, and they are trying to plan for the future. They don't want to just exist year to year in the League of Ireland in the First Division. They want to make something of it. I think Pat Tevlin's a really good man there to do so. I mean, he was talking to you at the start of the season and he said he's not half arse in this. He's going to put his whole arse into it and make sure that it works. And he, at the first sign of this being...
Pat Devlin's whole arse.
At the first sign of this being a bit dodgy, or if the wheels come off it, he's out of there. He's not going to hang around for a bunch of cowboys.
He'll get his arse out of there.
He will get his ass out of there. So no, I like what Cabo are doing. You have to admire it. I think one of the biggest surprises for me are Longford, because they would have
terrible
their chances.
Oh, I watched them against UCD on Saturday.
Getting right back up.
Really poor. Direct, really poor. Just poor. Like, that's the word I can use. UCD, on the other hand, were good. They won 2-0. Jay McClelland in the
economical.
Minute.
I like that UCD don't create a whole heap of chances, but are just absolutely brutally clinical with the one they do.
We've spoken a lot about headers in this week's podcast. I love headers. I just love them. Goals,
I'm
headers,
sitting
crosses.
Sitting here with a header.
Indeed, you are correct. With a great head of hair, in fact.
Oh, just stop.
Anyway, Dan Tobe and UCD right back. Very, very talented young player. He's not young anymore. He's probably 20, plays in their college 20's team.
20's young?
Yeah. Well, not in UCD terms. He's been in the first team for a couple of years. Anyway, he whipped in a deep cross to George Kelly, who rose in the box and headed into the top corner. Just, if you like crosses and headers,
better than Josh O'Hanlon's?
As good.
What?
Yeah, really good cross, really good header. Of course, you never see the First Division highlights.
You do. In credit, you have to. A lot of clubs now are going
putting
about
their
putting
own
their highlights
own highlights
up, and they do very, very well.
Yeah. Can I just mention one thing about UCD and Cavan Teely, though?
Are UCD doing their own highlights? I think Cavan Teely do their own
they
highlights.
They do.
Cavan Teely do. I know Waterford do. I think Wexford might, and I know Shells do.
Yeah. Can I make one negative comment about both clubs?
Go ahead, yeah.
They both played on Saturday. There was rugby matches on both pitches on the Friday. The ball was in bits. I wasn't in Cavan Teely, but the ball was in bits. And I understand there was
takes
due
a lot
to be,
for the ball to be in bits.
There was due to be
the ball tends to be decent.
There was a rugby game in the bowl on Friday, and apparently there was due to be one also on Saturday before the soccer match that was called off.
Thank God for that.
But I just not sure. And I know even in the UK and in the Championship, the likes of Wigan and these clubs, Hull, even the Premier League share with rugby teams, but they have full-time ground staff.
Yeah, Swansea and the Liberty.
Just not
Ospreys.
Good. Pitch wasn't good. And that apparently is why they both had to play night games, because the pitches weren't available.
It's time
teams
for summer
league.
Soccer now, Jamie.
And the rugby will be finished soon.
You'll get rid of your big, your knee-length Arsene Wenger coat.
I will.
And you'll be wearing your stupid little cardigans out to matches again.
I'm wearing a cardigan now.
Yeah.
I came into work today. Darren Clary, by the way, is wearing an orange American Eagle t-shirt, blue jeans, and these runners with have like orange straps in them. And Darren was on the morning shift today.
Orange
so
straps.
Darren would have been in at about, woken up at about 5 a.m. this morning.
About an hour later.
6 a.m? Okay, I was up at 6 a.m. as well. I didn't dress myself in the dark like you.
That's untrue and unfair.
I'm wearing skinny jeans from Bershka, a nice
Jamie,
All Saints t-shirt,
most of the
and
guests,
a cardigan from where?
Most of River Island.
Thanks very
most
much.
Most of the guests on this podcast, at some stage during the podcast, point out that you have A, crap hair, and B, crap clothes.
The producer is waving
almost
at me in the window to say we have to wrap up on time.
That happens almost every week. And there's no producer there, ladies
Thanks,
and gentlemen.
Dennis.
He is Dennis does not exist. Figment of his imagination. Much like the fact that he has nice hair is a figment of his imagination.
But I'm also in control of the microphones. So
okay,
if you keep slagging my hair, I'll just turn it down. Now, First Division fixtures very finally before our tweet. Friday, 2 on Friday, 2 on Saturday, 7:45 at Lone against Cavan Teely in the Athlone Town Stadium, and Shells against Wexford at Tauchcloy Park. And on Saturday, it's Longford Town against Waterford FC. That's a big match, particularly for Longford and Alan Matthews. A 7:30 kickoff down there in Longford in the City Calling Stadium. And at 7:15, Cove Ramblers welcome UCD down to Cove and St. Colman's Park. It is the hashtag greatest league in the world, and our hashtag League of Ireland podcast greatest league in the world tweets are coming up right about now, once I can find them on my phone. Yes, here they are. The first one, and I love this, I didn't actually know the Ticketmaster sold League of Ireland tickets, but a guy called Brian popped up a tweet on Saturday on the way to on Friday night, sorry, actually. Don't miss out. Get your ticket for the greatest show in town at Cork City FC, at Dundalk FC. Hashtag greatest league in the world. And a picture of four tickets sold for the sold out Cork against Dundalk match in Turner's Cross. Gary says, the kickoff has been delayed here slightly because the players have to change their socks. Hashtag greatest league in the world.
Obviously I had no sock tape. Should have gone on to
I'm not sure what match that was. Should have gone to Johnny Watson about the sock tape.
Johnny Watson has a but collection
yeah,
of socks.
And another League
shock
of Ireland
tape,
game.
Sock tape.
Another League of Ireland game was delayed. The game I was at, in fact, the second game I was at on Saturday. Fixing the net prior to kickoff here. And it's the Longford Town goalkeeper, Paul Skinner. And the Longford midfielder, Dean Zamber, on his shoulders. And the linesman supervising with his flag.
Well, I'm glad they didn't use Dylan McLeod because he wouldn't reach the crossbar even if he was on someone's shoulders.
Correct. But yeah, like, get the net sorted out, lads. Now, the nets were probably only scrambled up on the ball because of the rugby match, but still, like, get the net sorted out, lads. And one more from me, Darren, before you jump in. Neil Reardon from The Sun. Today's results see Bohemians move up to fourth in the league table. They have a negative goal difference.
Greatest goal difference in the world. Jamie, do you remember Mr. JJ Gabay?
Jonathan Gabay, my pal. Do I have a clip of him here? I might do somewhere. Will I find it? No, it's gone.
Well, have a listen to this.
Okay. This is the League of Ireland brand expert in inverted commas.
Yeah, that was obviously launched at the time. It's a pretty decent video. I was just wondering, Jamie, because they didn't use the logo that they suggested.
No.
And that video hasn't featured too prominently. That was tweeted by Dave Hooper, who covers a lot of League of Ireland games. And he actually, some of his ideas were pretty good.
I was one of the journalists at the time who actually tweeted the photo of the new logo saying this was the new League of Ireland logo because nobody thought to tell us that this was only his idea of the logo.
And it never...
And then we all had to delete the tweets when it had a load of retweets and all.
Yeah, I remember the logo I had was I had the picture from the Euros with Seamus Coleman and Shane Long and Wes Hoolan and Daryl Murphy and they're all wearing their League of Ireland jersey and they put text on it to say, the League of Ireland, not that bleak. I thought that would have been a really good marketing campaign. Actually, speaking of marketing campaigns, I've noticed the billboards around some of the grounds of the hero players. That's a really, really good idea. Really good idea. I did laugh, though, yesterday. The official SSE or Trustee League Twitter account tweeted out an interview with Adam Evans and it was an audio interview and it was text and everything. But the picture they used wasn't Adam Evans.
Who was it?
I'll show it to you now here.
That's like, and the Electricity League and everybody there is doing a great job. But it happened somewhere else recently where there was a photo of someone and it just wasn't them.
It just wasn't them. No.
Let's test my League of Ireland knowledge now because I'll be able to tell you who that is once you show me.
You will. It's been deleted.
Oh, it's gone.
No, it's not. There we go.
Let's see. That is Adam O'Connor. Audio. At Shells FC, midfielder. In fact, he's a striker, Adam Evans. Hopes at loan.
He's a winger, isn't he?
Promotion campaign. Yeah, that's Adam Evans.
Yeah.
No. That's Adam O'Connor.
That's Adam O'Connor in the photo.
Speaking of billboards, well done to the FAI finally. They had ads for the Electricity League during the Ireland-Wales match.
Yeah, absolutely.
At halftime. Final two for me, Darren. I want to show
you
this photo.
The Ireland-Wales game is probably the worst football match I've seen in the last month.
Terrible. The last year.
By a long stretch. Yeah. It was so dreadful.
Finn Harps, Ethan Boyle and Danny Morrissey receiving some treatment, Darren. Have a look.
What am I looking
well,
out for?
Well, it looks a little bit, shall we say, like they're doing something else.
Ah, Jamie.
It does.
Get your mind out of the gutter.
No, but that's what the person tweeted.
You're a grown-up adult.
Well, let's just say that Danny Morrissey's head is near the midriff of Ethan Boyle as he sits down. And, yeah, okay. Finally, I want to give you this one. An amazing gesture from Apparay Wanderers to devote their full programme cover against Limerick FC to Derry City's Ryan McBride, and it's that picture that Derry City made of Ryan McBride with the castles in the background, and it was the front page of the Bray programme. And I actually got a little bit emotional watching Soccer Republic on Monday when the beginning of the show they had a little 2 minute package of all of the stadiums doing their minute silence and their minute applause with this like quite sad music in the background. I'm actually getting goosebumps now.
I think you have to
sad.
I mean, at times over the last 4 or 5 episodes you have complained about the time of Soccer Republic.
Yeah,
I've try to defend them because I think what they do for the league is very, very important. But you could not fault them on the last 2 weeks. They have been incredible. Yep. They stepped up in very, very difficult times for our profession to try and do justice to someone's life. It's easy to say he's a good player, he's a great player. But when you're talking about someone's life and trying to actually say words that will not try to bring comfort to people, but convey the kind of person he was and do some kind of justice when trying to talk about him. I think Soccer Republic have been brilliant, and credit to everyone at RTÉ for doing that. And even, I mean, the GoFundMe campaign,
yeah,
it was the best stuff about the League of Ireland has come to the fore in the most difficult times. You have to give credit to RTÉ for the way that they handled it. To League of Ireland fans, I mean, I was on the GoFundMe page myself, and I mean, people talk Shane Duffy gave €1,000, people talk James McLean gave €1,000. For me, I was most heartened by, you know, Alice from St. Pat's who gave £20, or Sean from Limerick who gave a tenner, because there was so nice to see that in such a really depressing circumstance, League of Ireland fans were brilliant. And I do think, I don't think you get it anywhere else. I just think you have to, the family orientated vibe, the community spirit, it was some of the best stuff about the League of Ireland was highlighted at a really depressing time, and I think that's a nice note to sign off on.
Yes, and if you'd like to listen to our own tribute to Ryan McBride in last week's podcast with two of his former teammates, Keith Ward and Shane McElhenney, some really nice stories from both of those. You can listen to that now in the podcast section of 98FM.com. That is where we leave 98FM's League of Ireland podcast for this week. Talking back about the football this week, we're still remembering that Derry City will play their first match this coming Friday evening. It's a 7:45 kickoff. But will be a packed McGinn Park to see Derry take on Bray Wanderers. The best of luck to Kenny Shields and all of his teammates. We're very impartial, Darren, but I hope Derry win that match.
I would love to see it. I would really, really love to see it.
Have a great week, folks. Enjoy the football, and we'll chat to you soon. See you. Bye-bye.
For up-to-the-minute League of Ireland coverage, see 98fm.com/sport. 98FM's League of Ireland podcast is back next Wednesday, and every Wednesday on 98FM.com, the 98FM app, and on the 98FM Sport iTunes channel. 98FM.